What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Yanks of the Cop. We are here, Steve and Sophie, holding down the fort for Friday's final word. Open agenda show, so feel free to hop in, bring us your questions, anything that you want to talk about.
Let me hold down the fort for Friday's final word.
Sorry.
Some echoes like that. All right. But yeah, a lot to get to, I think. Also, there's a few things that I want to talk about. But before we jump into that, Sophie, how you doing? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday!
Woo! Friday.
Oh, thank God. It's been like the world. I was just saying before, it's been the world's longest week, but the world's quickest week at the same time. And I'm just, it's a long weekend here as well. In England, we've got bank holiday Monday. So it's 3 days off work.
There you go. I'm jealous of that. That sounds nice. I wish I had a three-day weekend, but I'm taking a couple days off next week. So I have a four-day weekend next weekend. So but yeah, everyone in the chat, we appreciate you guys. Go ahead and like and subscribe if you haven't yet. But Sophie, I think the first thing I kind of wanted to get your opinion on is obviously there's been some announcements about a lot of teams, a lot of platforms doing the social media ban this weekend. I think it's a really good cause. You know, I'm not going to be too active on our Yanks of the Cop page. And my opinion is I'd like to see people come together and do this. I would hope that it's going to cause a change. Personally, I don't think it's going to cause a huge change. I think until the social media companies are held responsible for what's on their platform, nothing will change. But they show of solidarity otherwise. But what are your thoughts on it?
Honestly, I get the sentiment behind it. I really do. I get the sentiment, you know, all going blackout. It's the first, you know, big stand that football and clubs and that have taken on, you know, racism and online abuse. But it's not going to change anything. Like, it's not, what is it going to change? You know, they're going to come back in a few days and then the abuse will just start right back up again, because it's at this point, Bohemi's tweeted it out earlier on, it's like taking the knee now. It's become a little bit of a PR stunt just to look like you're doing something without actually being active and doing something. And change isn't going to come around without active, you know, reactions and active, you know, decisions being made. And we saw it, just to go back to, just quickly touch on it, the European Super League, you know, 48 hours of complete and utter uproar got that overturned.
Yeah.
Because the powers that be wanted it to happen. You know, the Premier League and UEFA and everyone, and, you know, FIFA, they didn't want it, so they completely shut it down. They had the power to do that. So that just shows that they do have the power to stop racism in football and stop online abuse, but the social media platforms don't care.
No.
You know, we've seen it being on Twitter. You've seen people get banned for swearing. And then there are people who are vile, abusive, you know, sharing indecent things online and nothing happens from it. So unfortunately, I like the idea, but I just don't think anything's going to come from it right now. It's not going to make a big impact, not the impact we want, apart from hopefully this is the start of, you know, a revolt against it. But I don't think this will do anything, really.
Yeah. I could not agree more. And before I elaborate on that, Chris Welch, Mr. Consistency, he is here. You're the man. Thanks for coming in. I would love to hear about this argument or debate that you had with a Liverpool fan. I would love to, you know, maybe me and Sophie can share our opinion on that. And 1892, Luke and Co., thanks for coming on. We really appreciate you guys. Wow, Southampton up 1-0 with a man down. That's big time. I'd like to see that. Now if Fulham can get a result against Chelsea tomorrow, that'd be huge. But I completely agree with you. And again, I think it's great. The problem is, right, is that, like, it's like when you think about it, and I've heard some people say, like, it's a good first step. We shouldn't have to have steps to shut down racism. You know what I mean? It should just be one of those things that, like, you wish you could just flip a switch and it'd be done. But, like, unfortunately, that's not the world we live in. And that's the thing, too, right? Like, social media platforms, how they get paid with advertisements and all that stuff. Like, they need to show they have a lot of activity on their platform. So when something like racism and stuff like that does happen, the good news is that there's a lot of people that come out against it on the tweet. You know, they'll come out and say it. But again, it draws us more traffic on those social media companies, which then, you know, more traffic, they get pitched out to the advertisers, they get paid more money. So literally until a law comes down that says that social media companies are held responsible for that, nothing's going to change. They didn't want to invest the money to hire more people to survey all the tweets. Like, that's the last thing that they want to do. You know, so hopefully this blackout, you know, will kind of drop activity a little bit. I don't think it's going to do a huge thing, but you know, hopefully we can, again, I wish we could just flip the switch, but ultimately the fact that this is a step that makes me feel good. And it seems like players especially are finally getting to the point where enough's enough. So again, hopefully their voices are heard. Hopefully more fans get behind them as well. And just like you said, with the European Super League, hopefully we can just get this taken care of soon.
No, I completely agree. Like you said, it's a good first step, but it's sad that the first step has to be made in general. And, you know, obviously with having one of our co-hosts as well, I just don't understand how you could send abuse to somebody based on the colour of their skin. Like, it's not fathomable to me how if you're going to send abuse to a football player, send abuse because of their performance. What's race got to do? What has that got to do with anything? But, you know, that's a completely different subject in its entirety. But, you know, hopefully this is the start of some, you know, positive change in world football. And like you said, players and managers and all that are standing up and saying, you know, enough is enough. But isn't this like the same record being played on the flip side? Haven't we heard this before? Years ago, show racism on the red card, that massive campaign that was meant to be the first step. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen. Nothing changed. It just got worse. And like you said, it's not down to football, and it's not down to football, it's not down to them. It's down to the governments of these countries putting down rules and legislation that says social media platforms are responsible for X, Y, and Z. If you don't comply by this, you will be fined, you will be taken to court, and then they'll change, then they'll do something. But until that happens, you're completely right. It might make a dent, but it's going to be like a droplet in a wave pool.
Yep, and same thing. Like, you know, Liverpool just launched the anti-hate campaign. You know, so I mean, again, it's the same thing. Like, the fact that we still have to do this stuff is ridiculous. I mean, again, I like how Liverpool, the club, has come together, and hopefully, we'll cover that. But what I love about Mohammed's point right here is this is spot on, because I can relate to this directly. You know, racism should be thought from a young age, and it's a very sad thing that people don't understand this. And honestly, like, I do also, you know, especially where I come from, I blame, you know, the schooling, because you grow up, like, where I grew up in the States, you know, the textbooks that I would read in history class, like, talked about how, you know, from an American perspective, Abraham Lincoln, like, ended slavery, and, like, you know, we became more inclusive in, like, the 70s and the 80s, and, like, having, you know, schools come together and all this different stuff. And it was ridiculous, because, you know, we were taught that racism was over. And like, I lived in a town that was probably 90-95% white. So, you know, and I was friends with the only black kid like my age, and then he ended up moving to California. But literally, we're taught that it doesn't exist. And all of a sudden, I get out of high school and I go to college, and I'm some of my teammates at For Footy are black, and you know, I see how police officers treat them differently than they treat me and stuff like that. And it's absolutely mind blowing. And you know, one of the things I love about this podcast that we do is, you know, we have Andrew and myself who are Yanks, who kind of are, you know, outsiders looking into European football. We get a lot of shit sometimes there for being Yanks. So it doesn't even matter what we say. It's just, oh, you're a Yank, so you don't know. You're a female. So it's the same thing. Like, oh, you're a female. Like, your opinion doesn't matter. You don't know shit about footy. And then we have a homie who's he's black. And, you know, it's like he understands everything from the diversity standpoint. So I just think all of us, and that's what I love about us four as a team, is that we all have these completely different viewpoints. But I think we've all shown that we know enough about footy, and all of our opinions are pretty valid, you know?
Yeah.
So I agree with you, Mohammed. If something can change there, that would be, I think that's where it needs to start.
Yeah. But I think also, just to go off your point about school, and then like, that I completely and utterly agree. Like, we'll move on from this, you know, quickly. But, you know, you just mentioned how in America, you were taught that, you know, racism was over after Abraham Lincoln, you know, after he ended the Abolishment of Slavery Act. And then obviously in the 80s and 70s, things got better for black people and everything's hunky-dory. You've got equal rights, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of British people will say, oh, well, we're not taught like that because we're not Yanks. We're British. Well, as a teacher in England, I can tell you that we do local area studies in history. And not once when I was growing up, I live in Liverpool, I was in school in Liverpool, I was raised here. Not once was I taught that Liverpool's port, the Albert Docks and the Prince's Dock, had a massive import-export and slavery. Like, we weren't taught that. I didn't find that out until I was in my early 20s. And I just think, no wonder people seem to think that these coloured rose-tinted glasses of their country is not racist and that there isn't a problem. You're not taught about the problem. That's the issue. You're not taught why your country was bad, only how your country did good things. And I think until, on a low level, we fix it in schools and parents and that actually teach their children from young about racism and about, you know, equal rights. Because these children grow up not realizing there's a difference until it's too late.
Yeah.
And then it comes online abuse.
No, and that's exactly it too. And that's the and I think even, like you said, like on the parent level, like the parents who aren't racist, like, don't really have those racist conversations with their kids, right? And don't educate them that that hate and everything is still out there. Whereas when you have those older generations who are still racist, they do pass that on with their children. You know what I mean? So, and I think that's what the issue is that there's just a lot of, like, you know, being not racist just isn't enough anymore. You have to be like anti-racist now, which obviously I want to, and I think me and you both want the same thing. But I think that's the problem, is that a lot of people who just aren't racist, like, just aren't aware that just not being racist is enough, and that, like, there is still a lot of people out there who are raised that, like, whites are better than blacks, like, things like that nature.
Hi!
What's going on?
He's in. We were just wrapping up about the anti-racist campaign and Liverpool's anti-hate campaign. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking about this in the past, but one of the things I said was just that great thing about our podcast, you know, we're Yanks talking about European football. Sophie's a woman, Mahomie's black. So, you know, and that's one thing I love is that we're pretty diverse here, but we're about to move on. Like, I don't know if you want to add anything to, you know, the blackout that's happening on social media by some of the big clubs and big organizations. Looks like Chris Welch says you've escaped from the basement.
Yeah, I hit the links earlier, so apologies for being late. I actually don't know too much about the blackout. I think I just saw it today. Everybody seems to be protesting or boycotting social media this weekend, right? So, I mean, I think that's great. I think that someone like Jordan Henderson kind of took this upon himself. I think before there was a boycott even organized, and he set up a social media company to take over his social media accounts and just kind of tweet or, you know, post on Instagram, Facebook, you know, anti-racism, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's great to see. It's great to see everybody else coming along as well. And I'll just echo what Patrick Bamford said. You know, everybody was up in arms about the Super League, up in arms about UEFA, but how come we're not up in arms about racist remarks that are constantly seen throughout this game in every league? It's not just the Italian league. It's not just the Spanish league. It's not just the English league. It's every league. So it's something that needs to be we need to have a similar response to not having the football the way we want it to. You know, treating people equally throughout the game. So I think that this is, you know, hopefully it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Again, yeah, I think it's a great point to end on there. One thing I wanted to get to was Chris Welch's argument he got into. I thought this was a kind of an interesting conversation that he had. He was talking with another fan about Gomez and Konate. This other fan called them world class. Chris Welch thought that. He disagreed. Gomez is a good defender, not world class, and Konate has potential to be world class. What are your guys' thoughts on that assessment from Chris Welch on Konate and Gomez?
I'd agree with Chris completely. Like, you know, Konate is, you know, relatively fresh face on the scene. You know, he's a bit, like I said before, said it in, you know, our argument with Wahomie, like the 10-minute debate. He's a baby. You know, he's a new face baby defender. It's going to take him time to embed himself. He's got the potential, and that's the key word that Chris has used there. He has the potential. He's not saying he never will be. He's not saying he's not a good player. He's just not there yet. And to define someone as world-class, they need to have proven themselves on multiple stages over a significant period of time. Otherwise, anyone could be world-class. I could be a world-class, you know, forward for Liverpool, you know, because I played one game with the Liverpool shirt on, if that's the argument you're going at. You know, I can't kick a ball in a straight line. But you know, I completely agree. You know, Konate is not world class, but he has the potential to be. And Gomez, I love Gomez, and as good as he is and as strong as he is, you know, I will admit that I am looking at other defenders and thinking who could be a replacement for him. Who, he is quite injury prone. We've seen it before. You know, this is his, what, his third big injury since signing for us. We need somebody a little bit more stable. And I do genuinely think Chris has hit the nail on the head there. Gomez is a very, very good defender, and there's no taking away from his skills. There's no denying it. But he's not... I wouldn't put him in the same bracket as Virgil. I'd say Virgil is a world-class defender, but I would never say that's like a discredit to all those amazing centre backs in, you know, current football and, you know, historical football. It's a bit of a slap in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were gonna go, Stephen. I think Sophie hit it right on the head. I think that's very well said. I agree with Chris Welch as well. I don't think that. You know, we're so quick on, you know, as Liverpool supporters to call our players world class, call our managers world class, and many of them are, and the manager definitely is. But I remember when Tsimikas was signed, everybody was like, "Oh, we have the best second best left back in the league now. He's gonna be playing so much. You know, Robertson will get a break. It'll be great." And blah, blah. So I think we get a little bit ahead of ourselves pretty often on Twitter and as Liverpool supporters. And I know other teams do it as well, and other supporters do it as well. But Joe Gomez, he's turning 24 next month in May. I think it's like late May. So he's really young. I think Konate is 21, 22. He's really young. Kabak is 19, 20. He's really young. So they're all going to be understudies of Virgil, who's the only one of those who actually is world-class. I think Gomez, you know, his pace bails him out a lot, which is obviously, you know, a great attribute to have as a center back. But, you know, he does, his positional awareness can kind of get him into trouble sometimes. So hopefully he can learn more from Virgil in that sense. I haven't seen enough of Konate to know his strengths and weaknesses, but I know he's a good player with, seems to be a lot of upside potential. So, I wouldn't expect him to be world-class right away either. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with Chris Welch. I think that we could have the potential to have three world-class center backs, but right now we have one world-class center back.
And that's amazing in itself.
Yeah.
No threat having a world-class center back. You know, correct. He's a diamond. You don't find them all the time like that.
Yeah, no, I think you guys are spot on. Chris Welch, who is our world-class subscriber to this channel, he's 100% right, though. It's world-class has to be the most overthrown word on Twitter, I bet. Like, it's those in the stupid comparisons for, like, everyone gets compared nowadays and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Overuse things all the time. It's crazy. Mighty Reds Television, welcome back. You're the man. Definitely want to have you back on after a win sometime. That was a pretty sad episode that we had you on last time, man. Thanks for coming in. But honestly, I think Gomez showed signs this year that he could be potentially world class, especially when Van Dijk went down. It really took for Gomez to go down for us to really start collapsing. Now, when Van Dijk went out, I thought Gomez held his own, and we had a lot of concerns about Gomez. Like, how is he gonna be disciplined? Because he tends to be undisciplined at times. And he showed me signs, but A, he hasn't done it long enough yet, and B, he's still developing as well. There's still things that he can get better. Again, discipline, consistently positioning could be a lot better. I think he is one of the better Premier League center backs. That's definitely no question. And then with Konate, you know, same thing. He, when you look at what his skill set is and his body type, he checks all the boxes of being able to be a world-class player someday, but he still is wildly inconsistent. There's times when he gets a little too confident with the ball at his feet and he tries to play out of the back too much, and he's caused a lot of turnovers. Again, he needs to stay healthy as well. He's had a couple injuries. Not saying he's injury prone, but same thing with Gomez. So I think they're getting close. I think they're definitely good to really good center backs. I think they're perfect deputies to Van Dijk, perfect number two guys next to Van Dijk. And give them a couple years, and they can be up there. So I would agree with you on that, Chris Welch. I don't know about that other fan, what he was thinking, but and Muhammad, just to let you know, it looks like Mighty Reds already got on top of it, but Matip and Phillips will not be ready for Sunday's game.
Matip's out for the season.
Yeah, Matip was out. Didn't he do his Achilles tendon?
Yeah, I mean,
his Achilles tendon?
I'm sure it was his Achilles.
I thought it was his ankle.
I think it was his ankle.
I thought it was his Achilles, but don't hold me on that. Like,
if it's his Achilles, he's out until this time next year.
No, but he's running. He's outside running like Van Dyke is, but he's still like Hendo's running, Joel's running, Van Dyke's running, but he's still not close. Like now he's got to start cutting on that and stuff. He won't be ready by the time the season comes back.
Off there, Mighty Reds. Also, Klopp said Van Dyke's like still got a long way to go. That's not what he said. Klopp said he's not expect just because the boys are out running. Doesn't mean they're going to be ready for you know team training next week. They are not ready for that, but for them running, that's in the final stages of their rehab now. You know, outdoor sprinting starts off with straight, then it starts changing your direction, spinning on that foot, then you start doing drilling, then you start five sides, then you go back into team training. They're not that far off. They'll be ready for pre-season, you know, but to say Klopp's saying is Vedran like still got a long way to go? He doesn't. He's well on track, or actually ahead in his rehab. And I think that's been misconstrued, because I think it was James Pearce put out the full quote of what Klopp said, and then it was David O.C. Cop who took a small snippet of that, which made it seem like Klopp was saying that Virgil van Dijk and all the boys are still a long, long way ahead, and we won't see them for a significant period. And I think that's where that misconception type thing has come in. The boys are actually will be back in training after the 2-week break, I reckon, after the before preseason.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if Van Dijk plays in the Euros. I hope he. I honestly hope he doesn't, but I don't know. You don't think he will?
Because technically, Jurgen Klopp, club comes before country, and Jurgen Klopp can put his foot down and say no. And with him being our star center, and he did it with over the international break, he put his foot down with certain players and said, you're not going on international duty, it's too risky, it's not happening. And I think with Virgil being so paramount to our, not just our defence, but the mentality of our entire team, I think it's too big a risk to send him off to the Euros as his first, you know, experience back after, you know, a season missed. I don't think Jurgen, or because we've hired a new head of physio, and the new head of physio that we've got is very much a case of take the rehab slower. Because our previous physio, that's where we were coming into problems. They were rushing them back too quick and they were getting re-injured really quickly. Mm-hmm. Saw that happen with Matip and Henderson. Hendo's knee went again because you were rushing them back. The minute they were medically fit, they were back on that pitch. Whereas this physio tends to have a little bit more knowledge of, you know, longitudinal recovery. That's the way I, you know, perceive it to be, that they take a lot more. Yes, you are medically fit now, but let's give it a little bit longer just to make sure it embeds before you move on. But whether Virgil wants to play or not, you know, every football player wants to play for their country and every football player wants to play as many minutes as they can. But at the end of the day, it's not really down to him. It's down to the medical professionals and it's down to Liverpool Football Club. They are the ones who sign his contract. They're the ones who pay his wages. And they're the ones who make the decision of when he's fit to return to game time. And if Jurgen Klopp and the medical team say, no, you're not going to the Euros, then I am all for it. I am all for it.
I'm for it, too. I mean, also, too, when you think about the Netherlands and their team, I mean, there's no doubt that Van Dijk and any team would raise them. But you know, they do have De Ligt in the back. They have De Vrij in the back. They got Ake too. So, like, you know, they have guys there who, you know, can fill, I wouldn't say fill the entire shoe, but guys who are pretty solid in the back there. So,
yeah, but if Klopp and Liverpool have this power, I don't understand why they wouldn't have utilized that with someone like Naby Keita, someone like Mo Salah in the past. When they've gone away on international duty, Naby Keita, you know, wasn't really clear. I don't even think he was cleared fit to play for Liverpool yet. And he went off to international duty and played for Guinea and ended up re-injuring himself. So
it's not really, it's in the bylaws that the club has the power to do that, because obviously the club is the owner of that player. But it's not something they really exercise, because obviously most managers are ex-football players themselves, and they understand that feeling and, you know, that that drive. And again, back then, during the you know, the World Cup, when Naby went out and got injured and he played for New Guinea, and it was like 45 minutes, he was down on the pitch saying, I need to come off, and the manager refused to take him off. You know, that's where the butt of all his injuries came from. But I think it's back then, especially, like I said, our physio team was very different, and it was very much get them fit, get them out, get them fit, get them out, get them fit. And that's not just our team, that's a lot of teams. And I think seeing the last two seasons, how many injuries have occurred as a result of not properly healing from the last one, a lot of teams are taking player health more into consideration.
I hope so.
From now, I'm hoping, and I do genuinely think that a lot more managers are going to put their foot down when players aren't fit or just match fit, won't be sending them.
I'm also kind of hoping too that he, along with, you know, everyone else on the team, will want to kind of preserve themselves for next season, knowing that they all want to come out with a point to prove, saying that, you know, show everyone that, like, it was because of injuries that we are where we are. And when Liverpool is a healthy team, where we are the best team in the Premier League. So selfishly, I kind of hope that happens, but, you know, we'll see what happens there. Definitely something to keep an eye on once the season ends. But Mohammed in the chat brings up another good point here, that with no Phillips again, this might mean that Fabinho playing the defense against United on Sunday. I know we're definitely going to be talking about this tomorrow on the pre-match, but just kind of really quickly, I saw some stats on Fabinho and center back, and I don't think we've won. If we've won games at him as center back, it's only been one game. And our record this year is a lot better when he's in the center of the park instead of center back. So, overall, do you think we see him at center back? And if not, who do you start at center back with Kabak in the back?
You don't have a choice, do you? You're between a rock and a hard place. Any other team at any other point, I'd have just gone, you know what, put Reece Williams in there. Like, put Reece Williams in with Kabak, or put Ben Davies in with Kabak. But we all know that Ben Davies is buried underneath the concrete in the basement, under a steel bridge. Like, he's not coming out anytime soon. And it's United. And above all else, even if top four's gone, you know, Champions League is gone, the season's an absolute write-off. You don't want to go down easy to United. It's the biggest rivalry we've got. Like, you don't do that. You don't bow out to them. You go at them constantly. And I think the only choice is to put Fabinho in there, which does make a massive hole in that midfield, because we've seen it statistically. Fabinho needs to be in that number six role. You know, but what choice do we have? I don't know what else, unless one of you two have suddenly, you know, have got a wonderful idea of how to fix, like, what you would do instead. I can't particularly see any other way around it.
Andrew?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that I'm just worried with having Reece Williams back there. I know he had some good games, I think, when he was called upon. But then I think he was, like, you know, in the Newcastle game, he was definitely he was picked on a bit. And I would expect if he started that United would just have a field day on that left side. They would constantly try to kick balls over the top, and Williams just doesn't have any pace at all. And Kabak isn't the fastest man in the world either, or the quickest man in the world either. So I think that'd be dangerous. I mean, I know that Fabinho, I think that Fabinho should be in the center of the park, because if we lose the midfield, then we'll likely lose the game. But it's a double-edged sword, in my opinion, because quick ball over the top from Fernandez or Fred or McTominay or whoever to an oncoming Rashford, that's going to be open all day. So that's something I'm very worried about. But I think Fabinho has to be in the center of the park, because somebody needs to disrupt Fernandez. Somebody needs to be able to track the runs coming through. And he's really the only one that can really do it. The other two players, maybe Milner starts, maybe Genie starts, Thiago. Other than that, I don't think there's anybody else that will see the pitch in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, and I think it's been pointed out in the chat by our boy at Mighty Reds, Dan, that Reece Williams was seen playing next to Quebec numerous times this week and a back four. So that'd be interesting to see. honestly, in my opinion, I think you kind of have to go for it. I mean, what's the harm at this point? Go for it. I would say start Fabinho at the sixth spot. We know he's world class, and
the harm is losing top four though. That's the harm.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like you're already kind of having to play catch up. Like
they also have a tough schedule left.
They do.
But the idea of historically with Liverpool and United, the idea of putting Reece Williams in. It frightens me. It sets me on edge. It doesn't feel right. It's like putting the under 23s out against them. It feels wrong.
Yeah.
Like Leicester's tied with Southampton right now, 85th minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, you never know. I mean, Chelsea has Fulham tomorrow, but I mean, they do have. I think they still have to play Leicester. They got to play. Do they have to play City again? I'm not sure. They don't have an easy run in. Doug, thanks for coming back in, my friend. Sophie does think that you're ignoring him. Ignoring her, so
ghosting me.
Yeah, completely ghosting.
Chelsea, yeah. Have Fulham, Real Madrid, City, Arsenal, Leicester. Leicester twice somehow. One's the FA Cup, maybe.
I was gonna say, how can the
Then Aston Villa. So they have a tough schedule. That's not a walk in the park.
No.
True. Very true.
I don't think you can do anything with this season, can you?
It's been a weird season, that's for sure. It's
very odd.
But that's the thing though with Liverpool. Like we have an easy schedule on paper, but the games that we have left are the games that we've struggled with all season.
So. We've done better with the harder games than we have. We've made the easy games that we should have. That last season we would have just absolutely walked. We've made them it's painful. It's painful. No other way to describe it. It's pain. It's that Stephen Giff, isn't it? When he said that, he goes pain. Like that's what it is.
Yep. But I agree with Mohamed, though. I do want to see Milner in that game on Sunday because I want to see him just checking bodies like he does. I think that would be awesome.
If Fabinho's in the midfield, you know that Genie's going to start. So does he not start Thiago again? Does he go with Milner?
Oh, no, I don't like that midfield. I don't like Milner, Genie, and...
There's zero creativity, but that's Robertson to get forward.
Against Man United, we're doing like a pre-match for United now. But going up against their midfield with Bruno Fernandes, I don't like your odds on that. Like, I'd love to see Milner piggyback him and elbow him into the boards. I would love him to do that. I'd love him to piggyback him. But we always say that you go from back line, midfield, front three. Midfield's not given any feeding anything to that front three. The front three at the minute are not finishing very well. They're not on their form. If you take that one good thing away from them with that midfield of that three, I can't see it working very well. I can't see us scoring. And we've been playing for a draw. Personally, I feel like if you put that midfield out, you're playing for a draw.
See, if the training rumors are true and Reece Williams is back there, then I think that's going to be really tough. But if they're not true, and Fabinho goes at center back, then you have a midfield that basically chooses itself. You have Genie, Thiago, and Milner. What?
Jones on for Genie.
Excuse me?
Put Jones on for Genie.
I just don't think he's going to do that.
Sophie.
He hasn't changed Genie all year. I don't think he's going to start now in the biggest game of the year.
I love Genie, I know, but I just think Jones is really quick and nippy, and he just cuts in between them, and he would make Harry Maguire's head fucking spin, and it would be great.
No doubts there. I wouldn't hate a Curtis Jones shout. That would be interesting to me, and it would also show a little bit of ambition to try to go get a win. Somebody a little bit more creative going forward, but. Yeah, we'll have to see, but we'll get into that tomorrow with the pre-match. I don't want to take away all of our content for tomorrow's show. But The chat so far, you guys are on fire. Hit that like and subscribe button if you haven't yet. Helps more Liverpool fans see this channel, so we super, super appreciate it. But before we kind of get off the subject, this is one thing, though, that is kind of important to me. That, you know, Chris Welch, he doesn't want to see any hugging and kissing nonsense before the game. Don't talk to them. Don't look at them. Don't put go put your crunching tackles in. The game has changed so much from, like, a decade ago when, like, you actually hated the opponent and all that stuff. But I do want to – and, like, so after the game and, like, you see, like, Firmino or whatever, like, liking posts of his Brazilian mates after they beat us or whatever. Like, what – like, I don't think that's – that stuff's a big deal. But leading up to the game and then the actual game time, especially now where our back's against the wall, we need to go get everything – I do want to see that same – I do want to see some of that ruthlessness that Chris is talking about. Like, I want to see them play with a little bit of an edge to themselves, because it seems like pretty much since December, when the going gets tough, Liverpool dives out of the way and gets – and, you know, it does not step up to the plate. So I just want to see a little bit of attitude, and I hope to see that on Sunday, because you go out and put a performance in against Man United – and you go get 3 points at a place that we have struggled at significantly since Klopp's come here. We've been talking about needing the spark all season. Maybe that's the win that we would need to propel us the rest of the season.
God, we'll have to see. But we'll talk about all that in our pre-match tomorrow. Because at this point, we're going to have absolutely nothing to say apart from up the Reds.
Big quick show. But the one of the big news that did come out this week was a couple things. So number one was Klopp's comments today talking about how important it is to get Champions League and how it can make things a little bit more difficult. On top of that, Liverpool reported since May 2020, $46 million deficit from COVID. Losses could hit up to $120 million. And then our wage bill would be could be increasing as well due to some player bonuses. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that and how that could impact our window?
I'll go since Andrew seems a bit eaten. You are.
I'm eating.
I thought Andrew was eating. Do you know what? It's to be expected. You know, the 120 rise into what was it? 80 million rising up to 120, possibly. You know, we're not the only club who's going to have felt that. We are a club that has a wage structure for a reason, and I think our wage structure has kind of been our saving grace this season. I feel like the clubs who don't have a wage structure, who play heavy, heavy wages for players who don't really do anything, they're going to really feel it more financially than we do. But every club in every league across the world is going to feel this strain, you know, this financial burden. They've had all the expenses of playing the games without the money from season ticket holders, without the money from fans in the stadium, without any, you know, shops were shut as well. So you haven't been able to go into shops and buy, you know, match day memorabilia. You haven't been able to do any of those things, you know, no match day programs. They create a large revenue as well every game. So I think everybody's going to have felt that financial strain. I think if you're surprised by the news, more for you, to be honest, if you didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be interesting, because I do think that this is a very, very important, if not the most important, transfer window on the Klopp. And if you're saying no European football, losses like this, we all want to see FSG invest money in the club, but it's going to be real. It's going to take some creativity to make the team better. I mean, maybe you look at signing a guy like Memphis Depay on a free, have him come in. But we saw how he's done against how he did at Manchester United. You know, I don't know if you'd be able to get Luis Suarez without on a free without. You know, so it's just like that's what I'm saying. Like those are kind of like the avenues you may have to start looking at just to bring in talent. Like we know we want the Oriars, we want Newhouse, we want all these guys, but we're gonna have to make some significant sales. You know, all pretty much every single person on loan has to get sold. I think.
Clear the cabinets.
Say goodbye to Genie's wage. You know, maybe even like a Matip as well. But like it's.
No!
You know, it's going to have to take some creativity, I think.
Selling my favorite people?
Just saying, like, if you want to move forward, sometimes you got to do that.
You're not having the giraffe. You're not having him. Keeping him.
Baby giraffe. Baby giraffe.
I don't want a baby giraffe. It's not like Baby Groot. You can't replace. You can't replace Big Groot like Baby. You can't replace Matic. I don't want a baby giraffe. Piss off.
Unfortunately, we do need to sell Matic like 1,000%. It's true. It's so true. He has to leave. Like
I quit. I'm not playing anymore.
And when he's fit, he's somebody who's actually world class. Like. That's what I'm talking about. Like when he's fit, he's I think top five in the world. He's unbelievable, but he's never fit. He plays, you know, less than 10 games a year, pretty much. So yeah, I think that FSG need to do. I said this last week. I think they need to do two things to hopefully, if they want to stick around, to try to fix their image or restore their image a bit. And that would be to have a blockbuster transfer window. I'm talking a lot of people going out and a lot of people coming in.
Yeah.
So you sell Origi, you sell Shaqiri, you sell Ox, you sell Matip, you sell Harry Wilson. I think he's going to keep Naby.
No. If he keeps Naby and sells Matip, I will personally smack him. I will find my way into Kirby and I will smack that German. Oops, I'm sorry. No. You do. If you're saying that you're going to sell Matip because Matip's not available, for fuck's sake. But if you're saying you're going to sell Matip because...
Oh! Oh, she got the shoosh button.
Oh, boy.
You just got shooshed.
Right, I'm up now. I'm not talking to you. It's
awesome. Yeah, what a sneak attack. I didn't even know that was created yet, and we just got that dropped on you.
I think it was the first usage of it.
That was
the first time it was ever used, I think.
Yep.
Literally, it's a good job that button came up on the screen because my face literally went. But I was just saying,
they've invested too much with Naby now. They've tried. Well, he was a massive transfer wage. I think he's on like 150 to 170 wages. Maybe he's like 120 actually. But now they're starting his whole new training regimen for him. If they were trying to get rid of him this summer, I feel like they wouldn't have done that. You know, see, they wouldn't have.
Sorry, is with Naby, like you're saying that he's on a wage bill of like 100 and something plus. But then you've got Genie Wijnaldum who's on 75 grand, and that's what annoys me. Why are you doing like if you're saying, and the biggest thing we always say on our podcast is availability is the best ability. So if Genie Wijnaldum is playing 38 games a season for you, plus cup games, plus Champions League games, plus games for his home country, like he is so available. Aren't you seeing his worth? It might not be the most, you know, the brightest star in the sky, like type thing. He might not be the best, you know, creative player, but he does his job and he does his job very, very well. And you're saying he's not worth more than £75,000, like. When you've got Naby Keita, who spent, you know, 90% of his career at Liverpool on the injury, and, you know, he's not even been on the table. Like, he's spent more time on the medic table than he has in the training room. And you're saying he's worth 100 plus. I don't get it. I need Naby to help.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fault of the club that Genie Wijnaldum never got a new contract. I don't know why he's still on £75,000 a week, where James Milner is on 140, Jordan Henderson's on 140. You know, I think he's going to leave because he ultimately wanted, you know, 180 to 200 a week.
I don't think he deserves that.
What?
I don't think he deserves that. Like,
no, he doesn't. But I mean,
performance.
Yeah, well, from his point of view, though, he's been significantly underpaid, compared to his peers. So.
Without a doubt, but I think that should have been something that when he got his contract renewal, obviously when he got his contract renewal, I think it was 2019, would have been his last contract renewal. At that point, we had Salah, we had Virgil, we had all these players who were getting like the big, you know, money signings. At that point, they kind of made leeway, you know, like a compromise, and at least give him like 100 grand salary. Because I think if they did give him 100 grand salary, at this point, he probably might have only been asking for like 140 to go like a par with Jordan Henderson above Milner because he plays more. Which at that point wouldn't have felt like much more of a massive financial impact because you'd have already made up for that, you know, 25,000 extra per week for him. so that, you know, 100 grand a month for him, you'd have already made that substitution. So then when it comes to adding the extra 25, I know it's a lot of money, you know, and to me, that's his wage is like 2 weeks is my entire house. But
yeah,
he should have made a compromise on his 2019 contract rather than left it until he was running down. And he's obviously going to go for big money, isn't he, for this big, you know, his final contract before he retires. Why not?
Yeah, but I think, I mean, Chris Welch makes a good point. Like, we need reliable players who are in Liverpool, not Bloody Hospital. But that was the thing, though. But, like, when you think about it, the last two seasons, he's probably been our most reliable center midfielder. Like, the last two think about the injury crisis we've had this year. You know, he's been there every step of the way. Last year in the title charge, again, he almost started every game, too. Like, you know, Henderson's gone down with injuries. Milner's gone down with injuries. Shaqiri and Knox constantly, Keita constantly, Curtis Jones is still on the come up. So it's like he's really been the guy for us. So like I totally understand where he's coming from. Like but like you said, now going from 75 or 80, whatever it is, to 140, that's a big jump. Big jump.
It's a bit much. And I understand why the club don't want to do that. Because, you know, if I went to my boss and was like, yeah, I'm on, you know, X amount of money, I want to now upgrade it to, you know, SLT, UPS, I want, you know, the 60 grand bracket, you go no. it's not going to happen. Longevity doesn't always provide you with the right to have extra money like that. That's ridiculous money.
Yeah, well, Mohammed, thanks for coming in, man. Enjoy your evening. Join us for the live watch along team news show post match. We'll be back on Sunday for sure. But the last thing I wanted to cover with you guys before we get to some trivia. Is the VAR stats got updated. So Liverpool has the most goals go against with 12. And then the most goals disallowed, but also first with 7. And the next closest is 3. So I think we can all agree VAR can go to shit. I mean, I can go fuck itself. But I have a fix. I have a pretty easy fix to it. But I want to get your both thoughts on those stats, number one, and then also what changes you would make to VAR if you could.
What are the stats again?
So Liverpool have the most goals, like, get overturned against them. So, most goals that were disallowed and then got allowed with 12. Or, like, you know, based on all the stats, like, it's minus 12. And then overall, the goals that they've scored that have been disallowed is 7. And the next closest team is 3.
Okay. Yeah, so Liverpool have gotten screwed from VAR this year. Am I going, Sophie, or are you going?
You can go. I think I've said all I need to say on VAR.
Yeah, I think, first of all, one thing that I think definitely needs to change is this whole, like, offside thing. Because, number one, the fact that it takes the linesman an age to put his flag up is absolutely ridiculous. First of all, it wastes the player's energy. It's incredibly frustrating for them. It's incredibly frustrating for the fans. And it's just a massive waste of time, in my opinion. And then when it comes to VAR and offsides, you know, someone being offsides by like an armpit, it just doesn't make. But that, I mean, if it's that close, just give it in favor of the attacker, in my opinion. Like, that at that point, just do it. If it's not obvious to the naked eye, then maybe just let it go. So that's my opinion with that. And in terms of what I would change, I think there needs to be a time limit. I think there should be maybe just give him 2 minutes, you know, and I think the ref should always have to go over and look at it. I don't think he should hear from it from the guys up above. I think that he's the one who's making the calls in the field. He should continue to be the one making the calls in the field. So I think he should always go to the monitor, but he does have 2 minutes to decide. So instead of hearing, oh, VAR, like, I got to, you know, if it's a big, you know, definitely not offsides. If it's offsides, just use right the way they've been using it, obviously. But if it's like a major decision, handball, penalty in the box, referee should go over, take a look, 2 minutes max, and make a decision. You know, that's all it is. And then you move on. Because this whole thing of it, VAR has become, it's a huge debate throughout the world of how to utilize it, how it is being utilized, all these different things. But at the same time, it's just a massive momentum killer. It's an absolute momentum killer. You got Liverpool will be on the attack, and then there'll be a foul call. Then we'll be sitting watching VAR for 5 minutes. It reminds me of American football. It's an absolute pain in the ass, and it's a momentum killer. So they need to change it. They have to.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, VAR is a mood hoover, isn't it? It literally, it's that one thing that comes in and just opens its mouth and just ruins everything straight away. And I completely agree with Andrew. Like, I've got not much to add. You know, he said everything really well there. But for me, I think with VAR is it needs to be used for fouls in the build-up to a goal. If there's a foul in the build-up, that's an actual foul, they need to be checked. Even if you,
Chris Wilson is filming today.
When Andrew said, if you put a time limit, so if you give them a minute time limit to decide whether there was a foul or build-up, if it's not clear and obvious straight away, it's not foul. That's the way it should be. You know, give the advantage to the attacking team. If it's not clear and obvious that the ref didn't notice it, VAR can't notice it within a minute, then move on. Don't destroy the game. Don't waste more time, because it just saps all the energy and players cool down. Like, we've seen it to the point where VAR calls have been going on that long. They've brought training balls onto the pitch for players to keep warm. That's not football. That's not what it's for.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, like, if it's a penalty, red card, you know, anything like that, free kick on the edge of the box, completely agree with Andrew. The referee needs to go and have a look at the monitor himself. He's made the original call. VAR have either confirmed it or counter-argued it. And if they've counter-argued it, he needs to go and check. Because at the end of the day, it's what he decides. And they're not looking. They're just taking what VAR is saying on, you know, as gospel. And that's not – we see that as fans. That's not for fact. Pundits have been saying it. You know, ex-football is absolutely slating it to high hopes. But I do think when it comes to an offside call, that linesman needs to just go back to putting the flag up straight away. Because if the linesman puts his flag up, then it's offside. Yeah. VAR can check it, but only bring it up if you've – so personally, I think – if a player's offside, linesman puts a flag up, it's called for offside, the goal doesn't stand. In the background, the game carries on. In the background, VAR are checking it. If VAR then turn around and say, oh, it was onside, maybe a free kick is given in that team's favour. You know, it might not be a penalty score and free kick, but they still get rewarded for a mistake. I don't know. But those offsides, we saw it at the very beginning when VAR came in. Jamie Carragher was in the VAR booth and they were talking about and describing how it worked. And it looked great because it was a case of they get the clip, the computer-generated system goes through everything, and then it either goes green button for onside, red button for offside. It automatically calibrates the lines. And I did this in one of my TED Talk rants ages ago, and I was like, for that case, you don't sit there and go, I draw a blue line, I draw a green line, I draw a red line, I draw a pink line, I draw a sparkly line. Like, I'm going to draw a pretty flower. Like, why are you drawing it from the armpit? Why are you drawing it at a 23-degree angle? It's it should be a perfect 180-degree straight line, and you're drawing it like 163. Like, why are you doing that? Why are you, when you've got a system that you have put your heart and soul into, and you have sat there and you have justified and defended to, you know, you die on that hill for it? If you've calibrated that system correctly within the premises of the rules of the sport, why do you need to go in and draw the line yourself? Because you wouldn't find me doing a straight line on the whiteboard in work with a perfect straight line and then going, actually, I'll just freehand that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see an artist, you know, getting a ruler, drawing a lovely ruler, and going, I just fucking do it. I squiggle it. You wouldn't see it, would you? So VAR, the actual computer system is not the problem. It's the people using it are absolute baboons.
Yep.
No, from their elbow.
And that's where I'm going to get. That's kind of what I wanted to cover too, because you know, Dan from Mighty Reds, you know, he says that Chris Wells, the officials are the problem. If not going to use the VAR properly and scrap every now and patience. Yeah, exactly. I completely agree with you.
Turn it with the annual. If you got it.
And then Dan again, like, they need to just use it for clear and obvious errors. And this is the point that I want to get to. I mean, it's definitely taking the fun out of the game. Like, a goal gets scored and you're like, do I celebrate? Do I have to wait? Like, you know, what's going on? But two very easy fixes for me to fix VAR. Number one, make it consistent for everybody. So I don't want to see any more of this. One referee draws it from the elbow, and then the next referee, the next match, draws it from the armpit. make a decision on where the lines are going to be drawn. In my opinion, I say just look at the feet. Okay, there's no debate on where the foot is. Do it from the foot, and then if the person's leaning over and like gets a header, props to that player for having the balance to be able to lean like that and score a header. So just come to a decision where you're going to draw the line from. Have that be number one. Number two, when you have the two lines on from the defender's foot and the offense and the attacker's foot, if the lines touch, then the call stands.
Yeah.
Whatever the call was in the field, that call stands. But if there's a space in between it, then you overturn the call.
Yeah, like that's a good idea.
And then very, very easily, when you see that little patch of green in the middle, it's over. It's done.
Steve, that's a really two very, very good points. But your opinion isn't valid because you're a Yank. You don't understand European football.
I know, right?
I completely agree. If the referee,
just remember what show you're on, Sophie. Just remember that.
It's my show as well now. Shut the fuck up.
But what's it called?
I'm going to change that name. No. You can't call it Yank to the Cock, but 50-50.
Yeah, we'll have to go.
We can discuss that another time.
No, we'll keep it as it is.
We'll call it the Brinks of the Cop.
Oh, no, we'll stay with Yanks. We will stay with Yanks. That's fine. But no, Steve, you've hit the nail on the head there. Like, they are the two obvious things that if they fixed, we'd stop moaning. We'd still whinge about decisions going our way. Like, we are going to moan because you don't want anything going against your team. But if they've got very clear rules of you draw it from the feet, if players are on set, if they're online, okay, let's go with the name of the game, football. Let's mark it from their feet. And as you said, yeah, if they're leaning slightly forward, like, I mean, obviously, it's not like this. You know, you kind of get to go, okay, offside.
Right.
But if the body's just slightly an angle because of, you know, the directionality of them, the movement, you know, the momentum of that movement of running, you're penalising the player for being quicker than another. That's not fair. Just because someone is quicker doesn't mean they should be punished for being like a marginal hair. Like, it became a running joke, didn't it, for ages? You know, make sure your toenails are cut, lads, before you play football.
Yeah.
That's how stupid it is. But the Dutch league do that. If the lines, if it's too close to call, it's onside. If there's a gap between them, then it's offside. It's simple.
Yeah, it's simple. Yeah, it's very simple. That's what I think. I think the technology is great, and I think that we should utilize the technology if we can. But yeah, I feel like in the English game and in the English leagues, it's just they use it too much. You know, it's just in every little circumstance they're trying to use VAR and it's slowing down the game. And you know, maybe this could actually be one of the concerns that Perez mentioned from Real Madrid. Maybe that's why some young people have stopped watching the game because it slowed down so much. And like I said, it reminds me so much of American football now. Everything is being reviewed. You know, it's just pretty soon there's going to be commercials while there's a review. It's just it's such a pain. And you know, one thing I have been impressed with VAR is in UEFA. I think they've actually used it pretty well. You know, the linesman holds up his flag for offside. It's like pretty quick. And, you know, if there's a serious challenge that needs to be reviewed, the referee runs over to the monitor and takes a look. So I think that they've been doing it great. I think that the English have been just
awful.
But I think too, I think it was Chris Welch or someone else had mentioned that the refs in the English league just aren't up to par either. You know, I think Michael Oliver is probably the best one by far. Like the rest of them just aren't great. So, I mean, obviously I think they need a little more education, a little more training, or maybe some new people need to be brought in. But I don't think it's the technology that's bad. I think it's the way that we're using it.
Yeah, definitely.
Spot on. I think that's a perfect segue to close that out. And let's wrap up with some trivia questions. So I have one I've actually wanted to ask. I wanted to ask the last show, but obviously I couldn't make it on. So what was that? I couldn't hear you under that muffle.
Oh, sorry. Let me say it clear. Part timer. There you go.
Go ahead and give Sophie a mute. So I think the first question I wanted to ask is if you could drive vehicle. Yeah, I unmuted you.
I was going to put on that paper.
I saw that come out and I was like, I better unmute her. So if you could drive any vehicle, what would you drive?
Ooh. okay, can we split it into like ridiculously expensive car and practical car?
Yeah, I'm gonna go ridiculous, like my dream car, you know.
Okay, let me think. Andrew, you go first. I'm thinking.
Dream car would be an Aston Martin Vanquish. That is just a sexy, sexy car. I actually saw one on the streets of New York City, parked in New York City last weekend, and it was so nice. I wanted it so bad. My realistic car would be an Audi S5 Coupe.
Oh, fuck off.
Why?
An Audi?
Yeah.
The person on the M62, literally, that will be behind you, push you out the fucking way to then do this. You are an Audi wanker. You're almost as bad as a BMW wanker.
No, they are the worst. BMW wankers are the worst.
Audi is the only decent one of them, like estatey type cars, is the Mercs. They're the only decent ones. The Audis are. Ugh.
All right, let's hear yours then.
Absolutely ridiculous sports car. I would go with a 1960s Ford Mustang.
Ooh, old school.
Love it. There's not a nicer than when you see a Mustang, and I, no matter how far away you are, you see that little Mustang horse, and you go, "Oh, Mustang!" And you just want them to go. That's what you want. And a 1969 Ford Mustang in red. That's what I would want.
That's sick.
And then realistic car?
Realistic car. I would love a. You're gonna hit you together. They're like, "Oh, really?" Range Rover.
I knew you were gonna say Range Rover. You're giving me crap. You're giving me crap about an Audi, and then you pick a Range Rover.
Yeah. And what? I will run my Range Rover over your shitty Audi. Watch my
foot
take you off the road, bitch.
Couldn't catch me.
Don't need to catch it. I'm a scout, so you'd be on cinder blocks. Bam.
Dan from Mighty Red says BMW 7 Series. Yeah. Awesome. I just don't like BMWs. Drove them too much.
That's a sick car.
It is a sick car. I've driven the
Lexus. Series. I don't like Lexuses.
Dave, welcome in here. You made it in just in time for trivia. So if I could go unrealistic, my dream car would probably be the Bentley Continental. I'm more luxury than I am sporty. In that regard. But that being said, if I could do something that was kind of realistic, probably still a little bit of a dream, it'd be the Porsche Cayenne SUV. I love that little small SUV.
Realistic. Those are sweet.
Yeah, I love that car. I think that car is awesome. So,
you know what I saw on the road the other day was a Lamborghini SUV.
Down in Miami, I've seen like 6 or 7 of those things. And it was
orange. It was like.
I hate the back of it. Not a car I would drive, but I never knew that Lamborghini.
Oh, I would drive it. I thought it was pretty sick. I wouldn't buy it, but I thought it was pretty sick.
Mm. Okay.
What's your realistic car?
Porsche Cayenne.
Oh yeah.
What would you rather do? Would you rather bungee jump or skydive?
Neither. I have a horrific fear of falling from heights. I don't like them.
Same here. I'm petrified of heights. Can't do it.
Like literally, have you two ever been to Liverpool before?
No, you were gonna go this year.
Oh right. Well, in Liverpool, in the town, there is like a big escalator that goes up to the Odeon, and right across it is like a glass platform between two restaurants that you can walk between. You can stand on it and look right over Liverpool One, and right over the other side to the Odeon. And I know that it's reinforced glass, and I know that there's steel bars underneath it, but my friend tried to get me on it when we were younger, and I wouldn't step my foot on the glass. And in the end, my other friend came from behind me and pushed me, and I swear to God, it was like she just pushed me out of an open window. I was like that on the glass, on the side, like clinging, like, nope. Literally was like screaming. She had to pick me up and take me off because I was fearing that, because I could see the floor underneath me. So attaching an elastic band to my feet and making me jump off a rock? Nope. Attaching me to a bag and jumping out of a 50,000 foot plane? No.
No.
Not happening.
I'll have to.
Even did it. Didn't you do it?
I skydove. Yeah, it was nice. I skydived, whatever it would be. Yeah, it was fun. Did it down in Australia, so that was interesting.
Oh, nice.
Awesome view. Actually, no, I was in New Zealand, technically, but yeah, it was awesome. But yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap up here. It's been over the hour mark, but everyone should check out Dave LFC Chats as well. I just did a video with Westlife's Brian McFadden. He's a huge Man United fan, apparently. So nice get. Big guest there. Good for you, Dave. Always crushing it over at Dave LFC's Chats. But that pretty much wraps up this episode. Everyone in the chat, you guys were on fire. Chris Welch, as always. Dan, Mighty Reds Television. You guys are awesome. Appreciate you guys so much. If you haven't yet, hit that like and subscribe button. We'll be back tomorrow. Quick turnaround for the Manchester United-Liverpool pre-match. We'll have to lock down a time. I don't think we've locked down a time yet, but we'll let you know on the channel. But otherwise, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back. Up the Reds, and we'll see you next time, everyone.
Bye, guys.